Chapter 108, The Secession. Great was the dejection, but also the indignation in Ulrum, when the sentence became known which had been pronounced upon Reverend de Kock. Yet they had no intention to abide by that unjust sentence. The consistory wrote to the synod that they would continue to acknowledge Reverend de Kock as their lawful pastor. At this time, Reverend de Kock himself had no thought of seceding. He really had in mind to turn once more to the king, even though the first time he was so bitterly disappointed in him. Yet a new appeal to the king has never materialized, for what happened? As soon as the dismissal of Reverend de Kock became known in the country, his friend Reverend Scholte of Duveren, a village located in North Brabant, traveled to Ulrum to succor Reverend de Kock in his sore trial. Friday evening, Reverend Scholte filled a speaking engagement at Ulrum. On Sunday, he wanted to speak again at Ulrum, but the counselor of Ulrum would not permit that. When in that way he was denied the pulpit, while standing upon a farmer's wagon, Reverend Scholte preached in the garden of the parsonage. Those two men have discussed many things with each other in those days, and it was Reverend Scholte who persuaded Reverend de Kock to secede. The consistory of Ulrum had desired that for a long time already, but Reverend de Kock had up till now refused to do that. But now Reverend de Kock realized that he had done what he could. There remained no other way out for him. The ecclesiastical governments had compelled him to do that. On Monday, October the 13th of the year 1834, almost the entire congregation of Ulrum, except 8 members, signed the act of secession or return. They separated themselves from those who, according to their convictions, were no longer a church. The Netherland Reformed Church was considered a false church by them. However, in this way they went too far, because they made no distinction between the synodical governments and between the church, which was dominated and oppressed by these governments. In this act of secession, it read that they returned to the sound Reformed doctrine of the fathers. They were really the continuation of the Church of the Reformation. That was true, because the doctrine of the Reformation had been abandoned by a large part of the church. That doctrine was despised and scorned, and those that held on to the sound doctrine and proclaimed that doctrine were cast out, because it did not remain confined to Reverend de Kock alone. Later we hope to tell you more about that. The consistory of Ulrum and also Reverend de Kock supposed that now that they had separated themselves, the church property would remain theirs. With the church property, we mean the church building, the parsonage, etc. They notified the classical church government, the provincial church government, the synod, the king, and the government of their secession, and at the same time asked for protection. On Sunday, October the 19th, Reverend de Kock went to church as usual, and as in the past, to preach God's word. However, when he enters the church, he may not ascend the pulpit. The church is filled to capacity. The counselor from the neighboring congregation shall speak that Sunday in Ulrum, but he cannot get through the crowd of people. The church members of Ulrum will not let him through. Then Reverend de Kock asks the congregation, who must speak this morning, the counselor or Reverend de Kock? As with one mouth, they all answer, Reverend de Kock. Again, Reverend de Kock asks the police who are present in the church and who prevented him access to the pulpit if he may ascend the pulpit. This is denied him. Standing on a consistory pew, Reverend de Kock has spoken that Sunday in his own congregation. After the service, when the members have gone home, the church is locked by the police so that no one can enter. From all this, it became clear to all that the church building was taken away from them, and they realized that from now on they can no longer make use of that. Through that, the question arose, what must be done now? During the week which follows upon that, a barn is hastily put in readiness, wherein the congregation shall be able to meet on the next Sunday. As best as could be done, everything is in order on Saturday. In any case, now they have a place where they can meet together. In the afternoon, suddenly 150 soldiers march into the quiet town of Ulrum. What a commotion that must have caused! The government, being instigated by the synodical church government, intervened. Ulrum is placed under martial law. The rough soldiers are billeted on the citizens. No less than 12 soldiers are placed in the parsonage. It becomes a strange, restless Sunday for Reverend de Kock and his family. The entire day they have those shouting and boasting soldiers in the house. Reverend de Kock and his wife are not even allowed to leave their room. Many pieces of furniture are either wantonly destroyed or heavily damaged by those rough soldiers. The bedclothes are trampled upon and torn in pieces. But it did not remain with this. Reverend de Kock is sentenced by the court to a 3 months' imprisonment and fined 150 guilders. That was a large amount in those days. This heavy punishment was inflicted upon him because the previous Sunday he had preached to the congregation while standing upon a consistory pew. Reverend de Kock went to prison for 3 months. There he sat as a criminal in the cold, gloomy cell, and while he sat sighing in the cell, his wife and children are driven out of the parsonage in the middle of the winter and put out on the street. Could it be worse? It seemed as if the days of the Roman Inquisition had returned. Hatred and vengeance were poured out upon the faithful preacher at Ulrum. They could not even leave his family in peace. For the time being, the preacher's wife was taken in by a member of the congregation. We just wrote that it did not remain only with the suspension of Reverend de Kock. In the year 1835, various preachers were suspended by the synod. The first one after Reverend de Kock was Reverend Scholte from Duveren, who had visited his severely tried friend at Ulrum. When Reverend Scholte returned to Duveren, he was immediately suspended because he had the courage to deliver a sermon at Ulrum. Thus, that was not allowed either. We all realized that it was not so much that sermon, but because he had chosen the side of that hated Reverend de Kock. They had already a grudge against him because he refused to have those hymns sung. Thereupon, Reverend Scholte and his consistory decided to secede also. From Reverend de Kock's experience, he had seen only too clearly that to protest was of no avail. After his secession, Reverend Scholte was no longer allowed to use the church building either, and he must likewise vacate the parsonage. More preachers followed. Reverend Brummelkamp from Hattem was also suspended. He also refused to obey the rules and had no hymns sung. Therefore, out with that revolutionist. In the Brabant village of Almkirk stood a minister by the name of Gazelle van Meerburg. This preacher was very gentle. As much as possible, he avoided everything which could give occasion towards strife and quarrels. To prevent all trouble, now and then he had them sing a hymn. A few of his church members were strongly opposed to those hymns. If now and then Reverend Gazelle van Meerburg gave out a hymn, then, as a sign of protest, some of those walked out of the church. Although others remained in the church, yet they kept their mouth closed and did not sing along. Generally, it became restless in the church. Reverend Gazelle van Meerburg thought, "Do you know what? If by that the peace in the church is disturbed, then I won't do it any more." From now on, Reverend Gazelle van Meerburg had no more hymns sung. This he did to preserve the peace in his congregation. And Reverend Gazelle van Meerburg was suspended by the provincial church government of North Brabant because, according to that government, he was unfit for the office of preacher. Here again, the same thing. They wanted to get rid of him. Then again, another preacher, a certain Reverend Van Velzen, was suspended because he had allowed another preacher deliver a sermon in his church who did not have the people sing a hymn. But also in this, the same thing, hatred toward the sound Reformed doctrine. A certain Van Ralta, who had finished his studies as preacher and who would not promise that he would have hymn sung, was not accepted and admitted as preacher. He also joined himself to the seceders. In this manner, the synod endeavored to get rid of the good preachers which were still there. Then peace would return to the church. Thus reasoned the synodical church government. But they were mistaken. To their great disappointment and embitterment, thousands of plain people left the Netherlands Reformed Church. For a long time already they had not attended church because they did not hear the truth from those liberal ministers. They sought each other in social gatherings. I have already told you before that not attending church increased appallingly. We already know that more and more children were not baptized. Well, then, those people joined themselves to the seceders. Those people went to listen to preachers who had been expelled from the church by the synod. There they heard God's word explained after their heart. Is it any wonder that those members who thirsted after the truth separated themselves? The church governments did not listen to them at all. Those plain people were talked about with the profoundest contempt. And now one could easily say they should not have separated, irrespective of all they should have remained. But to this we reply, what then must those people do? For them it concerned the truth, and only for that. From those deposed preachers they heard about the ways of God in which he leads his people. There they heard their life explained. There they received instruction and found food for the life of their souls. If then, on the other hand, over against that, we behold the obstinacy and the malice of the church governments, then we can and may not say anything else but that they were driven out of the church. Those people, among whom were many God-fearing people, followed the voice of their heart. It is said they were not allowed to break the unity. But to this I answer, the synodical church government themselves have broken that unity. Did they not cast the faithful preachers out of their midst? The guilt of the breach rests upon them. The deposed preachers traveled through the land and founded congregations. Even in that same year, 1835, delegates from 16 newly formed congregations met in Groningen And in 1836, the seceders had their first synod at Amsterdam. Not being bound to rules and liberal governments, the new church grew. Schismatics, they are deserters, thus railed and scorned the synodical church government. With hatred and bitterness in their heart, they thought, just wait, we shall bring them down a little. The synod stirred up the government against them. Their divine services must be made impossible. Severe measures had to be taken against them. And, alas, the government was found willing for that. Yea, even the king agreed with that. Even the king was of the opinion that stern measures had to be taken. Ah, the government itself was for the most part liberal. One of the members of the government even had the audacity to say, we must treat those seceders the same as lunatics. And then we must go still further. Not only the church and government, but also the Dutch people, as a people, were guilty of that. The greatest part of the people agreed with the church officials and the national government. In every possible way, the seceders were vexed and opposed by the people. An employee worked for an employer, and with hard work he earned his livelihood for his wife and children. However, that employee had joined himself to the seceders. One day he suddenly receives his discharge. He need not come back again. Say, why not? Did he no longer perform his duties? Had he deceived or robbed his employer? Why, no. That employee had served his employer faithfully for many years, and he still did so. But why was he then so suddenly discharged? Ah, just like that, because he belonged to the seceders, for that reason only. The faithful employee could go home. He was thrown out of employment. All at once, he and his family were plunged into the deepest poverty. But that did not matter. It served him right. Then he must not belong to the seceders. The boss no longer had work for such schismatics, for such agitators. If that employee tried to find work with another employer, then no one wanted to hire him. Why not? Well, the answer is soon found. Then he must not belong to those miserable precise ones. In this way, he had to unlearn those games. Over there, at the corner of the street, lived a baker who had a flourishing business. He was a skilled tradesman and served his customers well. But in a very short time, that baker lost almost all his customers. Say why? Did he no longer bake good bread? Had he begun to cheat? Why, no. He served his customers as well as ever. But he belonged to those seceders, and therefore they went to another baker. That baker at the corner was plunged into the greatest poverty and misery with his family. But that did not matter. Then he must not belong to those miserable, precise ones. Then he must not stand so apart. It was his own fault. Thus it went everywhere. Those people were thrust out of their village society. How much misery has been suffered in those days? How many hot tears have been shed? God alone knows that. Indeed, the Dutch people were also guilty. And yet, notwithstanding all oppression, hatred and envy, mockery and slander, the seceded churches grew. Constantly new congregations were founded. Those people sacrificed everything so that they could listen to the truth. They could not have the church buildings. Very well. Then they must meet somewhere else. In a barn of a farm, in a warehouse where room was made, upon an attic room, how willing those people were to sacrifice everything for that. How cheap religion is nowadays. How little is the liberty which we have appreciated. The growth of the seceded congregations filled the synod and the government with bitterness. They pondered on means to oppose it. That movement had to be stamped out. And, really, they found something. When Netherlands still groaned under the French yoke, and when Napoleon was still lord and master, the powerful emperor of the French had made a law in which was stipulated that gatherings of more than 20 persons were prohibited. Napoleon was afraid that thereby the opposition against the French tyranny would increase. Those meetings could become hotbeds of underground opposition, and that must be prevented. Just suppose that a revolution would break out. He would see to it that they would not have the opportunity. For that reason, that law was made. However, in that same law of Napoleon was included that religious meetings were not permitted to be disturbed. Whosoever still did that would be punished with fines and imprisonment. Well then, that old law of Napoleon, which did not apply at all to this time, was now applied to the meetings of the seceders. On the basis of that obsolete law, the church services of the seceders were dispersed. The Dutch people joined heartily in that. Just listen. In Rhenen, a number of people have come together to hear God's word preached. It is quiet and still in that meeting room. These people could no longer stand it with those liberal preachers. Their soul hungered after something else. But while they are sitting there together and with quiet attention are listening, a number of fellow villagers flock together outside. Outside is heard threatening and reviling. But the people inside are not troubled with that. They do not even know anything about it. Inside they are listening breathlessly to the preaching of God's word. Suddenly their attention is drawn to something strange. First softly, then louder, the crackling of wood and the roaring of flames penetrate to them. Slowly on, an irritating smoke fills the room where the small group is gathered. What had happened? The multitude that has flocked together outside has set fire to the house in which the seceders had gathered. By this, they were forced to leave the burning house as soon as possible. When the seceders come hastily outside, then a scornful laugh bursts loose. They are kicked, punched, and beaten. The people outside are having a good time. Isn't that terrible? Some time later, the owner stands by a smoking heap of rubble. He was unable to save any of his possessions. He need not look for sympathy. In the little town of Kesteren, in the Betuwe, a house where the seceders are gathered is also set on fire. In Amsterdam, in the year 1836, on a Monday evening, Reverend Veneralta served Holy Communion. As privately as possible, they have met together in their little church. Only several candles dimly lit the room. They do that so that it will not attract the attention of the passerby. It may be rather dark in that little building itself, yet there is light in their souls, for the Lord is in their midst. This time they are not discovered, and they remain together until 2 o'clock at night. Must it then go like that? It is the same as in the days of the Inquisition. But a few days later, in that same Amsterdam, a few seceders met in a back room on the top floor of a house. It is cold and inclement. Outside lies snow. Alas, it has become known what is taking place there. While braving the cold, a crowd of people assemble before the house. A store is located on the ground floor, in which cups and saucers, plates and bowls are sold. The crowd forces its way into the store and smashes everything to pieces. Jingling and the breaking of crockery is loudly heard, mixed with the shouting and yelling of the raging multitude. There comes the police running. Good. Now the rascals shall be punished. Naturally, that is what the police are for, is it not? But what is that now? The policemen thump up the stairs, force their way into the back room, and the seceders, who are quietly sitting together, are flogged with sticks to the outside. In the street below, the people shout and rant. In the meantime, they have greased the porch with butter. When those precise ones come outside, then they slide, some fall, and others, while stumbling, try to get away. In the meantime, they are being kicked, punched, and beaten, yea, even unto bleeding by the waiting mob. The police do nothing to prevent that. With a smile upon their face, they stand there watching that loathsome scene. Several days later, again in Amsterdam, a family that belonged to the seceders is treated in a most disgraceful manner. The police watched passively. Thus it went on throughout the entire nation. At Bunschoten, the seceders met in a ship. They were driven away with clubs by the dragons. Reverend Scholte conducted a service somewhere in the open field. He himself stood upon a farmer's wagon. Suddenly they were attacked by a detachment of soldiers who mercilessly commenced to beat those listeners. Many were wounded. Every time the preachers were penalized by paying large fines, and if they could not pay it, then they went to prison. The seceding congregations raised the money to pay those fines, because at times it ran into thousands of guilders. In those years, that country experienced a church persecution. All that happened in a land which formerly had fought 80 years for religious freedom. When King William I came to the government, he had taken an oath upon the Constitution. In that Constitution it read that all religious sects which were in the kingdom would receive equal protection. The king had sworn an oath upon that constitution. Hence all those maltreatments, fines, imprisonments, and billeting of soldiers were contrary to the constitution. Yea, but, said the enemies, the seceded congregations did not yet exist at that time, thus the constitution does not apply to them. Anyone can realize that this excuse was too childish to say anything more about it. Much more could still be told about those persecutions, but we shall let it go at that. It is all the same anyway. That which we have told you is sufficient to show us how conditions were in that country. Was there then no one who took the side of those oppressed congregations? Yes, there were a few who had the courage to say frankly that those persecutions were a shame. Do you know who also defended the seceders? The well-known Groen van Prinsterer. He himself did not belong to the seceders. He himself remained a member of the Netherlands Reformed Church, but he has taken their part, and he has sharply condemned that which happened through the entire nation. There were still several others who did that, but we shall not mention their names in order not to enlarge too much. Protests came even from abroad. A letter was sent to the king from Switzerland, which was signed by no less than 173 Swiss ministers. How can a descendant of the House of Orange do that? Thus it was asked in that letter. How humiliating for King William I. At a preachers' conference in London, a protest was also signed and forwarded, but no attention was paid to that. No, hatred predominated and all means were employed to oppress the seceders. They wanted to make the secession impossible. Secession had to be quelled. But that did not succeed. That could not succeed because it concerned the truth. God himself has given strength to those oppressed ones to endure in the hour of temptation. The leaders of the secession said that they were the continuation of the ancient national church of the Reformation. They had also signed an act of secession or return. We have already told you that, have we not? Well then, they have asked repeatedly of the king and the government for recognition and protection. This was always denied them. To be sure, the government was willing to recognize them, but then they must agree to the following stipulations. Then they had to cede all church properties. In the second place, they must no longer say that they were the continuation of the Church of the Reformation. Then they had to acknowledge that they formed a new society. Yea, they really had to declare that they formed an unlawful religious association. Only upon those terms they could receive freedom to meet. Naturally, the seceders could not submit to that. Then all their struggles for the truth, their struggle for the maintenance of the sound profession, must be declared unlawful by them. This they could not and were not permitted to do. They have fought for 5 years. For 5 years, and they have suffered revilement, contempt, persecution, and oppression. They have held out for 5 years and did not secede to the demands of the government. And then, Reverend Scholte, who no longer stood in Duveren, but had become preacher in Utrecht, suddenly applied for freedom. He had become tired of the persecution and oppression. He gave up that honorable conflict. The government granted him the requested freedom, but at what a price! He might no longer bear the name of Reformed. From now on, they would be called the Christian Seceded Congregation. Reverend Scholte should never, no, never have done that. With this, he relinquished his right. What a pity that was. They were called seceders, seceded from the Church of the Fathers, for which they had fought so fiercely. Again, it is to be deeply lamented that Reverend Scholte has done that. Yea, worse, it has been a great mistake of Reverend Scholte that upon those terms he has accepted the freedom. And although it is understandable, considering the persecutions and the misjudgment to which they were exposed, yet it can never be approved. They have bowed before the earthly monarch, before whom, in this case, they were not allowed to bow. They should have continued to obey God rather than man. Their fathers have suffered and endured for more than 40 years while the stake smoked and the murder scaffolds dripped with blood. The consequences of that request for freedom by Reverend Scholte was great. By this, great quarrels and disunity originated among the seceders. Alas, gradually more seceded congregations followed the sad example at Utrecht and requested likewise freedom upon those conditions. Others continued to refuse and called themselves the churches under the cross. In history, those congregations are known by this name. However, the origin of those churches under the cross is not only a result of the request for freedom upon the required conditions, but also due to the introduction of a new church order. But we shall not discuss all that, otherwise this history would then become too difficult and too extended. It is lamentable that by far the seceders did not agree with each other. They quarreled about essentials. They quarreled about minor things which are not important. The essentials about which they disagreed and quarreled were the request for freedom and the introduction of a new church order. These were matters of importance. But they also quarreled about the clothing which the preachers should wear. They quarreled about the church holidays, and with that I mean the second Christmas day, the second Easter day, and the second Pentecost day. Some wanted to abolish those second holidays. Others opposed that. They quarreled about the rhyming of the psalms which should be sung. Some wanted to sing the new rhyme, while others wanted by all means to continue using the old rhyme. Instead of leaving each other free in that, they tried to force their ideas upon one another. Through this, more schisms and dissensions were caused. Some became so weary about these dissensions and those endless quarrels that under Reverend Van Ralta and Reverend Scholte they migrated to America. We could write a separate chapter about this. How much those immigrants have suffered through sickness, of which many died, and through crop failures, through which they suffered the most bitter poverty and want. But enough of that. However, one thing we may not omit, since this has been very important, and then we mean the founding of the theological school at Compton, where the future preachers of the seceded congregations would be educated. A weekly paper, the Bezine, the Trumpet, was also issued in which each group obtained the right to write articles. Notwithstanding all differences which existed among the seceders, these two things, the university and the weekly paper, the Bezine, the Trumpet, have continued to cooperate. In 1869, almost all the seceded churches, the churches who had petitioned for freedom, as well as the churches under the cross, have united as the Christian Reformed Church. I say almost all churches because three churches withdrew themselves from this amalgamation and union, namely Enkhuizen, Lisse, and Tricht. These three churches continue to function under the name of Reformed Congregations Under the Cross. Later you shall hear more about that.